2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, the master of the Robo Scout. That would be Dylan White. Dylan, how's it going, man? We just updated the top 500. Lots of work. Another Robo Scout post coming too. So the work doesn't stop for you.
No, it doesn't. This is always like the tough part for the rankings because, I mean, James Anderson just did his top 400 prospects on RotoWire and he was talking about it on his podcast that it's like so much movement and you're with prospects, but the same thing with Dynasty. You don't want to overreact too much on it's only been 2 months. I know it's been, 2 months seems like a lot, but that's only one third of the season and so much can change and you want to react appropriately. What's real, what's not, all that. It's very difficult. It's very time consuming just to try to get it right.
Yeah. And I mean, like on the coaching side in baseball or just player development side, the conversation is always real versus feel. And sometimes feel is real, right? Like there are things that innately maybe aren't picked up in the numbers, but by watching or just following, you can pick up on some things. So, all of that kind of blends into it. But it is tough. And we were talking about this before the show, but I feel like the first 2 months can lead to a great deal of overreactions. It's when the most people are plugged in, frankly, to just not just fantasy, but I think in general kind of baseball. And then that kind of ticks back up at the end of the season with the playoff runs. With fantasy, it kind of dissipates starting in June. And then as teams are eliminated and fantasy football kicks up, it just kind of tapers down. So it's different in that sense. But I do think it gives credence to a lot of, it's not bad takes, but I do think like overreactions and like I'm guilty of this, like for sure. Others are guilty of this. I mean, I took some flack on Twitter this week about the Ronnie Cruz stuff. I will say, just in my defense, there are reasons behind Cruz, certainly the EVs. I'm always kind of a big proponent of speed and impact. Like those are the type of players that I tend to gravitate toward, particularly in fantasy, but also in real life. And the other part of the equation that was brought up to me by somebody else was his numbers since he was hit in the face with a pickoff throw. I don't know if you remember that happened about 3 weeks ago. That's kind of coincides with his struggles at the plate since. So I don't know if, that's just a coincidence or if there's maybe, some smoke there or something to it. But, that to say, like, I think we try to react to the good performances, the changes in skills, and that's prospects, that's major leaguers, just dynasty lists, top 30 lists, whatever. But nothing is really like a straight line typically. There are some guys that you react to it and they just continue to climb. Right now, and Eric Hartman is certainly like an example of that. Some of that might be the run environments that he's playing in, though I think we really believe in the underlying skills. But there's just so many factors. There's so much to factor in. It's like, when do you trust the underlying numbers that this guy is going to produce? Or when do you trust the underlying numbers that this guy who is producing is going to stop? It's just, it's tough to sort of read that and balance all of it and figure it all out. But that's kind of the mystery and the art of doing these rankings. So with that said, Dylan, I figured we would maybe talk about some of the big movers and then maybe some fallers towards the end. But some of the big movers, MLB players, as well as prospects, a bunch of guys kind of made big jumps in this list. One that I think we can feel pretty confident in the ability and ranking him highly is Brewers, dare I say, ace, Jacob Mizorowski. We know that the stuff is there. I think the execution, not just this year, but progressively throughout his professional career, you have to remember, this was a very raw JUCO arm when he was first drafted. He's shown kind of leveling up ability year over year. And I always think that that's a sign of a really talented player. So you stumped to move him up. I certainly backed it. Might even have moved him a few spots higher than you had suggested. What are your thoughts on Mizorowski? And is he sort of in that rarefied air of like fantasy true aces at this point?
I mean, he's definitely looked at that way by fantasy managers in my league, and I think they're right. I was probably the lowest on Mazurowski, like definitely lower than you on him. Like when we had our conversations about Mazurowski versus Chase Burns versus Nolan McClain, I think I had Mazurowski last.
Everybody wins in that one with the Chiefs. It was initially Burns versus Mazurowski. And I think I take Mazurowski. I think a lot. I think the majority probably would, but like Burns is right there, dude. It's not like he's he's chopped liver over there or something.
It's just like I was worried about the command. He's also kind of fragile. Like he would get out of, like his legs would hurt and he'd leave games early. I'm like, I don't know. Like I love the stuff obviously. And the skills are there. I'm just like, I can't invest. The guy throws so hard too. Like it's just a matter of time in my head of when he breaks, but like, he's just been insane the last, like all season, but like just the last month, he's like leading in strikeout percentage. His whip is the best. All his ERA and peripherals are like the best of the league, essentially, other than maybe Christopher Sanchez, who's hasn't given up a run in 44 innings or whatever. Like the stuff plus, especially if you like consider that he's throwing so many innings, like it's when you kind of apply innings weight to it, it's like the best in the league as well. Like it's ridiculous. So, I think the people who have Mazurowski are right to rank him extremely high. He's in like the Skeens, Scooble before the injury, like conversation of the like best asset, pitching asset right now. But you know, as you know, pitching always changes. You have a couple bad outings, you have a couple great outings, and suddenly, you know, Yamamoto's a bit lower or Logan Gilbert's a bit lower and Cam Schlittler is a bit higher. So, it is volatile, but Mazurowski has basically been the best pitcher, a dynasty pitcher in 2026 right now.
And let's stay right here with the Brewers conversation. Our number one prospect, I think he's pretty much everybody's number one prospect. Maybe there's some folks that have like Frank Venarius out there at number one right now. I don't know, but I would think it's Jesus Made. Made has obviously just been incredibly impressive at a very young age. And, you know, this is a point that we make internally. I think it's one that Josh Norris has made a few times and JJ as well. It's very rare that an organization has a player that they sign in the international market that moves as quickly and is as good as early as Jackson Churio was. But it looks like the Brewers have kind of struck lightning is kind of struck twice here with Jesus Made. Just turned 19 at the beginning of the month. We're recording this on the 30th. This will drop on the 1st of June, but we are recording this on the 30th of May. So at the beginning, you know, it's been less than a month that he's been 19 years old. Over 43 AA games, he's hit 271, 350, 442, 11.2% walk rate with a 15.5% strikeout rate. That strikeout rate is improved by 20% year over year. Didn't have a high strikeout rate last year, but during his little sample, and it was only a 5-game sample, but his little sample in AA last year, obviously the strikeout rate was much higher than that. He's also matched his home run total from last year. He's still stealing bases. I think this is kind of like, you know, we talk about players and how their value could differ from format to format, your OBP league versus your average league, your points league versus your roto league. This guy's kind of like bulletproof when it comes to formats because he runs, he gets on base, he doesn't strike out a lot, he hits for power, switch hitters. So he's a guy that you're not going to really going to have to worry about him. Maybe having some platoon splits, that happens with switch hitters for sure. But a guy that's equipped to sort of be, right-handed bat in the lineup against lefties, left-handed bat against righties, et cetera, that sort of platoon conversation isn't going to come into play for him. So he's going to see a lot of at-bats, which is going to drive some of those counting stats, et cetera. I think you'd like to see the ground ball rate, you know, drop a little bit by maybe 5-6% and see those turn into line drives and home runs. Like to see him elevate a little bit more. Some of that is just the nature of kind of having two swings. But I think when you look at the contact, you look at the underlying power, the speed, the twitch, the ability, the body, all that sort of stuff, there's still projection here. And how young he is and performing above a league average level in double A. And by the way, putting together a very solid slash line in the Southern League, which is the hardest double A league to hit in just based on the run environments, et cetera. That's all been a little fluky this year. We don't know if there's something going on with the baseballs or run environments are all messed up, but typically it's not the easiest place to hit. For me, and I know this has been very long winded, Dylan, just spent like 6 minutes on Jesus Madé, but for good reason. I think this is the top overall prospect. There's a reason for it. He's got age, production, you know, underlying data, you know, the projection side of things. He kind of has all of that in spades. It's one of the reasons that he's ranked inside of the top 30. I dropped the rankings for prospects in here. I just think when you look at, you know, value of some of the guys around him, they're pretty easy one-to-one swaps with a player that's this good, this young. Especially if you're rebuilding and kind of looking down the road, you're willing to take on the risk of the development runway, et cetera. But yeah, Madé is super exciting and be excited to see where this one goes.
Yeah, I like that point you made about how regardless of format, he's solid. Like he's going to be good in batting average leagues, he's going to be good in on-base percentage leagues. He has the speed for roto leagues. He's got the power. So it's not just a like power with no speed type of thing. He's going to play every day. And yeah, it's just, he's doing excellently. So he, you know, you said he has a 109 WRC plus in double A as a 19 year old, like Raniel Rodriguez, who's also 19, is struggling. He has a 38 WRC plus in 57 plate appearances. So it takes some time to adjust, and Madé is doing it at a young age. He's got Madé is a better WRC plus than Leo DeVries as well, who's 19 in double A. And he's got the better Statcast data than DeVries. Got better contact, better in zone contact, better exit velocities, doesn't chase as much. The barrel rate's not as good, but they're basically the same, 12% versus 40% type of thing. So yeah, I think Madé is kind of like the clear class. So great call there.
Well, let's jump back over to the major leagues and stay with pitchers here and guys that kind of broke out with huge stuff last year and have taken it to another level this year. And that's Yankees ace. Dare I say ace, even though Gerrit Cole is back. Cam Schlittler, just has kind of set the world on fire at this point. Of course, you know, one of the most talented pitchers in all of baseball. He was up to 35 in the rankings. That's a 35 spot jump from his April ranking of 70. And I think that's with a bullet. Like there's some pitchers above him. Christopher Sanchez is here. Logan Gilbert is here. You know, I could see potentially him, maybe Sanchez jumps Gilbert, and I think probably should. Yeah. And, you know, would be surprising if Schlittler doesn't. I don't know if he's jumping Sanchez just yet, but I think you can make the case for it. So what do we like about Schlittler, and you know, how high is the ceiling?
Well, he has a 1.5 ERA on the season and 7 wins. So that's a 20 win pace. He's on the Yankees. So, you know, it's not ridiculous for that to be sustained. It's not like Aaron Ashby with 9 wins or whatever it is. As a middle reliever for the Brewers, it's you know, one of the classes of the American League, firmly in the rotation, etc. I mean, the stuff has been great. We talked about it a couple weeks ago where he had taken such a huge step forward last year in the stuff, just adding velocity, and the movement was better and the mechanics were cleaner. There was like a tweet maybe a month ago that showed him like coming out of the draft, this is what his mechanics look like, and then compared to what they are now, and it's just like he just is a completely different player. So the projections, the point of this is that the projections take into account the whole kind of body of work in the minor leagues, and so you know, he was coming in as like an 11th round, 12th round pick, as the draft champion season, the first drafts were happening during the playoffs. I remember being in a draft and Schlittler had that big playoff game where he struck out 11 or whatever it was, and he got picked like immediately in the draft I was at. We happened to be in the 12th round or 13th round or whatever it was. And people were like, oh no, that's crazy. Like, look at his projections. It's not that good. You're going for the small sample size. But if you knew the underlying data that he had in 2025, you would know that he's a completely different pitcher, and the stuff was just ridiculous. So it was kind of a miss to be kind of conservative on our rankings. And so I think now we're kind of getting more in line, obviously, to do what he's doing over 72 innings. Like, that's a pretty big sample. And he's just dominating. I don't think he's had a bad outing yet. He's had maybe one that was below average, but he's just been consistently good. So you were talking about being long-winded with Mate. I think I'm being long-winded with Schliver.
No, not that long-winded. It was pretty good. Well, we're going to stay on the sounds here, and let's talk a little bit about the ageless wonder that is Kyle Schwarber. Not age. I mean, he's only 33. He's not that old. I'm old. But we were talking off air, and I kind of made the point. I think that this style of player ages very well. Kind of that elite power hitter doesn't really have to worry. Doesn't have to worry about playing defense. The skills with age typically continue to tick up. He's not losing any bat speed right now. Probably has a little bit of grace to lose. But I think if you look over the next 3 years, which is kind of how we project this, expecting, 90 to like 110 runs on, age 34, 35, 36, in terms of total numbers, I don't think it's crazy with this guy, especially, if he's in Philly the long term and hitting in that great ballpark, and, they're going to keep on putting bats around him. There's no reason to think that he's going to slow down. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that over the next 3 or 4 years, this guy could kind of slug his way into a very legitimate Hall of Fame contention kind of conversation. And we've seen it with guys before that, have this sort of power and it carries into their mid to late 30s. So not off him at all. His guy's moving up. What are your thoughts on Schwarber?
I mean, it's like the David Ortiz career path, right? It's like you're a DH, you kind of clog up the utility slot. So maybe for roster construction, it's not the greatest. He doesn't have the greatest batting average maybe, but like, because he's DH full-time, like Yordan, it's just like, he's not going to get injured. Well, maybe not like Yordan. the wear and tear on his body is much less. So he's going to be able to like slow that aging curve slightly. I was watching MLB Network a couple days ago, and it was Pujols was the guy commentating. And they're asking him what, if he had any regrets, what would he tell 21-year-old Albert Pujols in 2001, knowing what he knows now? And Pujols said, I would take days off. He said, the wear and tear is just so hard. And that's what Schwarber, by being a full-time DH, gets to have. If you look at like Zips 3 year projections on fan graphs, he's like 40 home runs and then 35 home runs. He's still a 30 home run bat in 3 years. I actually think that's conservative, because I think that's like preseason Zips before Schwarber hit 20 home runs in the first third of the season. So I think that number even goes up. And like you said, it's like this kind of slugging. He doesn't chase really. Like, he chases at league average. He swings the zone league average. He takes his walks. The bat speed is just still great. This is the type of thing that'll just be, 30 to 40 home runs for the next 3 years with a good on-base percentage.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's what separates him. And I liked your David Ortiz was on my tongue, but Ortiz, of course, got popped for PED. So I'm always a little weary with those. Like, oh, should I say that or not? All right, let's move on to the next guy. Somebody who we've talked about quite a bit at this point on this show. I think just generally in the fantasy baseball realm has been talked a lot. We have him now as our number three prospect on our dynasty list. That is Red Sox Franklin Arias. He moves up 165 spots in the overall dynasty rankings. Decent amount of spots, but not that high. We did have him as a top 25-ish prospect in the last update. Of course, the powers continue to tick up. He has plate skills to kind of sacrifice, which, I mean, he has lost a little bit of contact, but he had so much contact that he still has a plus contact rate while, you know, trading some of that. It's been a good trade-off. He's a good defensive shortstop. Not going to run a ton. I think that's probably what the knock is on the profile versus maybe some of these other guys. But a really talented prospect in his own right. I know one that the model and, you know, the Robo Scout has been pretty high on for a while. So talk to me a little bit about Franklin Arias.
Yeah, everything you said. He's just crushing double A on Robo Scout. Like, the gap between him and number two, which is Ethan Salas, who himself is projected at peak to be a 112 WRC plus with 25 home runs and 15 stolen bases, is just so huge, that gap between Arias and Salas. It's kind of like Arias is the like McGonagall of like great hit tool and has probably more power than you think, but not going to run compared to Griffin conversation. Like, so Made is the Griffin in this analogy, this kind of tortured analogy. So like, if you want well-rounded five categories, it's Jesus Made. If you want like the hit tool with power, but not as much speed, but probably better hit tool slightly and probably maybe more power, that would be Arias. They both kind of play shortstop, both pretty good defensively. So it's like, I kind of like that idea. So if you can kind of put your head in the mindset of like, do I prefer McGonagall or Griffin generally, like that type of profile, is that the type of profile I like? You know, that's a kind of a good analogy. I think I guess Arias is 20 years old, basically like 1 year older than Made, double A on the brink, plays good defense. Like, it's Trevor Story, I think, is in his last year. Is that right? With the Red Sox. So like, it's just a matter of time. Maybe he has one more year. Just a matter of time before Arias is playing in Boston.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it could even be by the end of the year. I think he's got to get up to AAA and is probably going to get a decent runway there in terms of a few months in AAA. But that could happen within the next few weeks, honestly. It wouldn't shock me. You know, I'm hoping it's this week. I'm going to see some games at Worcester. Maybe they bump him up for me. If you're listening to Red Sox, you got 24 hours to make this happen. Let's do it. While we wait for the Red Sox answer on the call up of Franklin Arias, why don't we take a quick break so you can hear from our sponsors? And when we come back, we got more players to talk about. All right. And we are back. We are talking top 500 dynasty update. We also put out a top 400 prospect ranking update. Both of those will be updated in a month as well. And then again at the end of July. And then, at least with the prospect side, it might be even shortly thereafter in July once all of the draftees have signed, just to get that first FYPD out and get those guys kind of worked in. So lots to look out for. We've already talked about Jacob Mizorowski. We've talked about Jesus Made. We've talked about Cam Schlittler. We've talked about Kyle Schwarber. We've talked about Franklin Arias. We got another five pack for you to go through here. Let's talk about another prospect slash MLB player. So it's kind of one of that hybrid. They're kind of like funky on the line. AJ Ewing, really great showing, obviously, this year in the minor leagues. He's gotten up to the big leagues and is getting pretty regular at bats. Have you been impressed thus far with AJ Ewing? And we moved him up quite a bit. Sort of, how are you viewing him right now if you're a rebuilding team?
So in Devil's Rejects, which is 20-team OBP, we had AJ Ewing and Sal Stewart, and we packaged the two of them for Julio Rodriguez. And we agonized over that. We wanted to have the, you know, top 20 dynasty asset in Julio Rodriguez, 30-30 guy, still young, done it for a while. Sal Stewart being incredible, but, you know, it's small sample. And then AJ Ewing being the sweetener in that is just like, it's so hard. So we eventually did it. It was not a sell high. Like, we love Ewing's sort of on-base ability. He's playing basically every day. He's playing center field. He's, like, hitting sixth in the lineup. He has a WRC plus of 112, just calling it up right now. You know, kind of projected to be kind of like a 15-home run guy with 25 stolen bases, and that's very valuable. And he's very young already. He's 21, so, like, Stephen Kwan maybe this is not a the best analogy, but so good hit tool, playing solid defense, maybe not the most power, 15 home runs, 12 to 15 home runs, but steals bases. Like, that is a very valuable player. And Stephen Kwan was like 25, 26 at the time. Ewing's 21. So you're getting like 4 years of Kwan before even getting to Stephen Kwan. I don't know if you, if you're following my train of thought, but Kwan used to be a pretty valuable player. And he was much older than Ewing during that time. He was a very valuable player. So as much as Kwan was valuable, Ewing is more valuable. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. So I think, you know, there's no real holes in the game except other than power. And even that, it's not even that bad. And he could grow into more power. So I do like Ewing a lot. He reminds me kind of, he's like a Sam Antonacci. Yeah, they're kind of very similar players too. They're, you know, both playing outfield. They don't have the most power, but they have good contact and they, you know, going to steal 25 to 35 bases. But Ewing's younger. So I like where we put Ewing, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, 100%. I think he was a easy move up guy and somebody that's moved up. And I think like the last five lists we've made dating back to like last year. always moving him up. Can't catch up to the ascending talent that is the Mets outfield prospect. All right, let's move on to another NL East. Excuse me, I almost said AL East. NL East outfielder. And that would be Michael Harris. He's a guy that's kind of been out in the valley for a little bit. Big boom when he first came into the big leagues. Kind of had some peaks and valleys, as I mentioned. Seems like he's ascending as well. Again, he's somebody that moved up on our list. What are you liking about Michael Harris in 2026?
I loved Michael Harris for the last bunch of years. And even last year, I was starting to wane. And I think a lot of fantasy managers did. He was struggling against lefties. He was just the batting average. He was always projected to be like 275 plus, and he was never quite hitting it from my recollection. I'm not looking at it right now, but I ended up with Michael Harris on all my DCs. He's my 100% owned player just because I think people had soured so much and then the value was still there according to the projections. And so I would end up having him, and he is, I'm reaping the rewards for taking that having that faith in him. His like peak projections have increased. Before the season, he was a 2020 guy with like a 285 batting average. And now he's a 288 batting average with even more home runs, 26 home runs and 20 stolen bases. So he's boosted his performance. He's still pretty young. He's going to play every day. He gets lowered in the batting average in the batting order against lefties, but, you know, he basically is hitting second today on Saturday. So yeah, just an everyday player, plays good defense and power, speed and batting average. Basically the Jesus Made of the outfield for Atlanta.
Yeah. It's just good to see the sort of the development. And I think part of that is just how skills and approach and some of that stuff can develop over time. So kind of a good point to be patient here. We're talking about Michael Harris, another player that I think it was really hard to be patient with for a long time. You know, was one of the most highly touted prospects. I think the first year that I started ranking prospects. So that shows you how long ago it's been, but that's Byron Buxton. It was him versus Corey Seager was the argument. And I think he's finally overtaken Seager in terms of fantasy value. Buxton is potentially having a career year. We moved him up. What are your feelings right now on Buxton? Is this a sell high?
I don't know. I mean, coming into like last year was kind of a career year, right? He got 542 plate appearances in 2025, which was his career high. And he had 35 home runs and 24 stolen bases. So he was a 35-25 guy, hit 260. And this is what I had been drafting for the last 4 years. He always projects well. He never plays the full season. It, you know, obviously it's the ongoing joke of when's Buxton going to be injured. And he finally put it together at age 31 last year. So I might've sold high then. Like if you asked me what's the rational play for Byron Buxton coming into 2026, is probably sell high because he had a career year. He's in his 30s. Like if people are think he's, you know, he's finally reaching that talent that and that potential and ceiling that he had. Now's the time you can unload him to those people. But he's like you said, he's having a career year now, even more than last year. He has a 141 WRC plus, which is higher than last year's 136. He has 17 home runs already. That's one third of the season. That's half of what he got last year. That's a pace for 51 home runs at this current pace. He already has two WAR, one third of the season, so six WAR pace. So like, he is having a career year. He's not running as much. He only has four stolen bases. Like I said, he had 24 last year, so he's on pace for like 12. I kind of don't want him to run that much. I think 12 is a good number. That's where he usually gets injured, is his lower legs, lower body. So would I sell high? No, I think it's tough. We were offered Byron Buxton and Yamamoto for Tatis, and I can't remember the pitcher. The pitcher was reasonable, and it's like it's the years we're selling on Tatis for Buxton, and I just couldn't pull the trigger. But I think rationally for this year, it's probably the right move. In Dynasty, maybe not, but yeah, I guess my point is I think you know, Buxton's going to be a 35 home run guy. And like we said with Schwarber, like this type of, like the bat speed is still up. This type of thing is going to still age as long as he stays healthy. And I think that's the key. He still plays good defense in center field. So like, they're not going to take him out and make him a DH, a full-time DH yet. But I wonder, you know, when that happens, he will probably gain, like extend his career another 2 to 3 years. And I think that's good for fantasy. So maybe it's a good time to buy him. Maybe you kind of scare your league mates by saying, you know, he's 32. He's never gone over 550 plate appearances. How long can you keep it up? It's just a matter of time. And then maybe, you know, you get 3 to 4 years of solid 30 home run value. So I think I talked myself around from maybe sell high to maybe not. Maybe this is kind of who he is for the at least the next 3 years, 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
You saw me do mental acrobatics in real time there.
No, I think, you know, he's obviously one of the most exciting players in fantasy. And, you know, there's a reason that we held on hope for so long. A player that's also been very exciting, but unfortunately is taking his first trip to the injured list. That's Minnetonka Murakami. When we initially ranked Murakami, he had not gotten injured yet. It happened immediately after. He was obviously always ranking, but somebody that's continued to move up, update after update. We were fairly high on him coming into the year because I ended up with lots and lots of Murakami across a bunch of different teams. So what are your thoughts on Murakami, despite, you know, the injury and how this is going to track? It looks like one of the best power hitters in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Statcast, all the power stuff is bright red. 98th percentile average exit velocity, 98th percentile barrel rate, 99th percentile hard hit rate, 98th percentile walk rate, too. So in on-base leagues, he is very good, and that's because of his 89th percentile chase rate. So he's kind of a Schwarber. He's Schwarber-esque, right? He's got the bat speed, which is 87th percentile. He does swing and miss, but he doesn't really chase. So he'll be great in on-base percentage leagues. He has 20 home runs or 18 home runs now. I think he's third in the league, basically just behind Schwarber. He's basically a 26-year-old Schwarber. And I think it's a matter of time before he's a DH as well, because you know, he's playing first base right now. The range isn't that great. And it might do themselves well to put Murakami as the DH. The White Sox have a lot of exciting infielders: Miguel Vargas, Colson Montgomery, Caleb Bonamer coming, Roch Chileski if they take him first overall. They just called up Jacob Gonzalez. I talked about Sam Antonacci already. There's always Chase Mydroth. I mean, they have some good young talent coming up. And that's just really the infield I was talking about there. So I think, you know, it's just a matter of time before Murakami's a DH, and then he may be on the Schwarber track. And he's young enough to do it, and he's starting to put together the track record now. in the major leagues. This isn't just 1 month of excellent performance. This is now 2 months of performance. So yeah, very exciting. It's a bummer. He's has a hamstring injury. They say, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or 2 to 4 weeks, either way, a month is going to be missed, but, you know, I don't think you're going to change his dynasty value that much because of that.
Yeah. Agree. I don't think there's much that's going to change here. Now for the last name that we're going to throw out there, going to be a little bit more negative this time. That's Max Clark. Max Clark moved down quite a bit. And Dylan, I don't know about yourself. I am a little bit concerned right now with Clark and sort of where this is going. He moves down to 19 now in our fantasy ranks, our fantasy prospect ranks, excuse me, was within the top 10 before. And when I'm looking at the players ahead of him, they are guys that are producing more at the same level, that are the same age or younger, players that have already produced at the same age or younger at the AAA level and are now in the big leagues, or it's some of the most high upside prospects in the lower levels. And there's only a handful of those guys that we're talking about here. Overall in the season, it's 268, 345, 387. He's really not hitting for the impact that I hoped he would hit for. Never thought this was like a 30 home run guy, but I thought it was more like 15 to 20 with a lot of doubles and kind of getting his slug that way, which is obviously valuable in a variety of formats. Still not striking out a lot, still walking at sort of an average clip there in AAA. Still running a little bit. That's why he's a top 20 prospect. I mean, we're not saying he's not a good player. But I think like the idea that this guy could turn into, you know, sort of that dynamic leadoff hitter that could get you 15 to 20 home runs with a high batting average, with like 100 plus runs and 25 plus steals, and kind of all the numbers that come with that. I'm starting to worry about that a little bit. You know, the barrel rate has only been 3% this year. That's kind of a concern. I feel like a lot of his hardest hit balls are really on the ground. It's a higher ground ball rate. I don't think it's terrible. 45.9%. We want to see that come down maybe a little bit, but at least at like kind of sustainable batting average kind of levels. The hard hit rate is kind of okay at 36%, but not great. But once again, the issue is, you know, he'll hit the ball hard, but it's hard ground balls. He needs to kind of optimize that swing. That's been something that's been said for a while with Clark. I think it's just kind of coming more to a head. And I worry that there could be some adjustments here and some struggles. And for that, I'm moving him behind some other guys that I just think have higher upside. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on Clark here before we wrap the show up.
Yeah, it's been a disappointing season. It's a 99 WRC plus. His peak projections have dropped pretty significantly too because of that poor performance. He was like a 20 home run bat with like a 123 WRC plus a peak, and now it's dropped to like 16 home runs and then a 110 WRC plus. It's an interesting conversation, thought experiment. I was talking about this with Brian Slack with regards to young prospects, young for the level prospects at AAA, like Max Clark, who's 21. Like Nelson Rada, who would have very good peak projections because he's so young at the level. That if you think about it, if you're 21 in AAA, you're on the verge of being in the majors. So you'll just say you'll be 22 in the major leagues. And if your peak, which is basically age 26, 27, is a 110 WRC plus with 16 home runs, you're going to have some bad early seasons. If you're going to be, it's going to take you 5 years to get to that peak. You're going to be in the majors, probably struggling. If you have him in a dynasty league, it's going to be like the Miguel Vargas conversation from a few years ago, where like this guy he's lost his prospect eligibility in the formats I play in. And so he's taken up a bench spot, and bench spots are very, very scarce. And we see this with pitchers too, where like a pitcher like Andrew Painter, you have to roster Andrew Painter and he's not doing well, but you don't want to drop him, but he's taking up a bench spot. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you have these really young guys on the verge of the majors, but who aren't showing superstar potential, you're going to have probably a very tough decision on your hands, because if they struggle for the first couple of years, you're going to have to decide what you're going to do with this guy. And the way Joe Adell finally showed the power projection years later, or Jordan Walker a few years later, it's tough. Like, those guys are the ones that are dropped. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I can easily see scenarios where Max Clark is dropped in the next 2 or 3 years in dynasty leagues, and then becomes a very good productive player like 8 years, you know, 4 through 9 from then on. So I think I'm just kind of babbling about the dynasty dynamics, in that if you're very young in the upper levels, yes, you're going to have a productive major league career. You may have a very fraught fantasy dynasty career, because if you're not producing in the early rounds or early going, you're going to possibly be on the fringe of being dropped. So it's kind of an interesting conundrum, where you want to be young in the upper levels because those are where the stars are, but you may have a tough go of it in the major leagues if you're not quite superstar material.
Yeah, I think that's 100% accurate. Great way to put it. And a great way to wrap up the show. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing and reading all of our fantasy content. We strive to get better with every list, and we certainly appreciate your feedback. Even if you disagree with the ranking, that kind of helps us, and sometimes maybe puts things into a sharper focus. Like, you know, I want to say that we're perfect with all this, but it's hard to do that. Especially with baseball, man. It's a fickle mistress. But thank you for tuning in. It's been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. For Jeff, for Dylan, have a great week.
Cheers.